Well, if you've been with us for any of these past few weeks, we've been talking about this thing called leverage. We've been looking at what are these things that God uses to grow our faith. Because see, God's actively at work in our lives. And as he's actively at work, there's something that God desires for all of us. And he desires that we would all have this absolute confidence in him. That we would have this big faith that's basically so big that no matter what would happen, no matter what we think might even happen, that we would just be able to trust God and say, okay, God, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what the outcome's going to be, God, but I am going to trust you to see me through this no matter what. And as we've been doing this and looking at this series called Leverage, we've identified a few things that God is using to grow our faith. So we started this with talking about practical teaching. Because the practical teaching is what allows Christianity to shift from just being a religion to where we begin to see it's about this relationship that God desires to have with his creation, with us. And so we looked at this and how when we get this practical teaching, this is when we get this aha, that's what it means. And now it's not just about this religious routine. Instead, it's about seeing and understanding who God is and why he's created us and what we should be doing with this relationship. We looked at these kind of relationships that God comes along and says, I'm going to put these in your path. We call these providential relationships. That there's these providential relationships that are a big part of growing our faith. It might be that you're somebody that, you know, you were already a believer in God and you were already trusting Jesus, but yet you just kind of slowly drifted away and really didn't have a God focus in your life at all. And then God puts somebody in your path. He says, I'm going to put this person here because you need a bump. You need somebody that's going to have my best interest at heart, that has some flesh and some bone, that's going to show up in your path, in your life. It's going to help guide you and direct you, bring you back. Maybe for you, maybe your faith story would be, you know, I never even thought that whole thing was real until, and your story might be about somebody who their faith was so real that you got to get to know. That you were like, I think I need to find out more about this. These providential relationships. And see, these first two are things that God keeps doing for us. Last week, we talked about this. We talked about these private disciplines. We talked about, hey, what are these things that we need to be doing? And we don't do it for show. We don't do it just so that everybody else can look at us and pat us on the back and go, oh, wow, look at you. You're super Christian. No. We would just take the approach and go, hey, that's just something I know that I need to be doing. And as I do that, and I don't try to call attention to myself, and I'm just serving God, that God uses that to grow my faith. And the way that we give, it does this. The way we give to others, the way we give to God. That when it comes to our prayer life, that we wouldn't have a prayer life that's only when we're gathering around the table for a meal or we're gathered in a small group. But we would have a prayer life that's private. That it's just us and God. And through that prayer life, that we're not just talking to God and saying, hey, God, this is what we need. This is what is, you know, they got this going on. But we spend time within this prayer life. And we go, hey, God, I just want to know you more. I want to see what you want for me. Help me to see today what it is you have in store for me. That we would pray these kind of private prayers. We would have this discipline that's in private. That we looked at this idea of fasting. Because fasting is when we take and say, hey, I'm going to go without food, something that my body needs, so that my soul can get what it needs even more. So that my soul can be fed in such a way that I begin to get to know you, God, in a different way. Because now I'm going to completely just depend on you for this season, whether it's a day, whether it's 2 days, 3 days, whatever it is that you'd be fasting. So that you would use that to be growing in your relationship with God. And these are things that God leverages. And today, we're going to talk about pivotal circumstances. We're going to talk about these circumstances in life that they can be hard. There are these circumstances, these things that end up happening that we would never wish for ourselves. In fact, most of us wouldn't even wish this on somebody we can't stand. We would never want them to have to go through that difficulty, go through that hardship, these pivotal circumstances. When I think about pivotal circumstances, there's one word that comes to mind, and that's the word surprise. And surprise kind of comes at you two different ways. There's that really good surprise, you know, when somebody does something for you and they're surprising you and it's something you would want and you would desire and you go, oh, this is so good and I feel so special. And maybe it's even a handful of people and they just kind of all shout out at once. surprise! And it's like, oh, that felt really good. And then there's that other kind of surprise. And it's not the surprise that you shout out. It's not the surprise that causes a smile. It's the being surprised with something that you didn't like to get surprised about. In fact, maybe you're even a supervisor and you've even told the people that work for you, I don't like surprises. I don't want to be surprised by a customer. I don't want to be surprised by somebody else. I want you to come in and inform, make sure that I'm in the loop and in the know, because I don't want to be surprised. Because we don't like those kind of surprises. And see, there's some of these negative surprises that become pivotal in our life. These things that end up happening that we wouldn't want, we wouldn't wish, we didn't desire, we didn't crave, we didn't even know if we could cope with, they end up happening. You know, maybe that surprise is that you're working and at your work, they're kind of telling you, hey, we think you're going to be the next person for this. We're wanting to promote you, but we just have to post this to everybody. But we just got to go through all this process, but the job's yours. And then when they finally list who got the job, it wasn't yours. And you're surprised. Maybe for you that the surprise came that here you are, you're in the middle of just kind of raising your kids and trying to grow them and shape them, and they surprise you with a choice, a decision that they have made that is not only detrimental to them, it might even be detrimental to your relationship with them. And that's not the kind of surprise that you would want for yourself or wish on anyone else. Maybe it's that you just go into the doctor and it was just this routine. I just kind of have this little cough and I just don't know what's going on and just kind of check it out. It's been lingering. And doc says, well, we need to just run some tests just to be safe. And then they call you back in for a follow-up. And the news that you get is news that you go, "That I don't get that kind of news. I don't. That doesn't happen to people like me. That happens to other people, but not to people like me." See, this is these pivotal circumstances. These things that we would never want, never wish, but they end up happening in our lives. What starts out is something that the only way we could see anything happen from this is going to be negative, this is going to be unfavorable, that we're just going to kind of figure out a way to cope if we can. But we would never see how this would be something that could lead to something good. But see, this is where God can come in and say, no, I can take a pivotal circumstance. I can take something that's hard, something that's difficult, and I can come in behind that, and I can use that, and I can grow your faith. That you can begin to see me in a way that you've never seen me before, and understand me in a way that you've never understood me, and lean into me and depend on me in a way that you never have before. Because God will do that. Because if you grow through some of these difficult circumstances, you might just look back at your life and go, that was the defining moment. That was the defining moment. That was the difference-making moment in my life where everything changed about my faith, and my faith became more real than it ever has. And although I never would have wanted that, I am so grateful that God allowed me to go through that so that I could know Him in an even better way. We're going to look at a couple of different passages this morning in our New Testament. We're going to start in the book of James. And in the book of James, you might not know who James is, but James in our New Testament, the writer, his name is James, and he is the half-brother, or should I say was, the half-brother of Jesus. Now, this is one of the things that just makes believing in Jesus so much easier for me. Because if you can convince your half-brother that you're the Savior of the world, there's got to be a lot of evidence. You know what I'm saying? I mean, because there's a lot of people it could be hard for you to convince. But convincing your family, especially a half, that has to be one of the hardest people to convince. And they shared the same mama, Mother Mary. But see, Jesus was born, his dad was God. His daddy, the earthly daddy that raised him, Joseph, was the father of James. And James, it took him a while to get to this place where he actually believed and trusted Jesus. But once he did, he got all in. And look at this with me. James chapter 1, verses 2 and 3. Dear brothers and sisters, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great disappointment. Oh, wait, that's not what he said. Consider it an opportunity for great joy. OK, Okay. When trouble comes your way, consider it an opportunity to be filled with joy, great joy. Then he says this to kind of help us understand it all. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. Yes, life is. It's full of surprises, some good and some aren't good. But when we lean into God and just see what God is up to and how he can bring us through, it can grow our faith. In fact, unexpected difficulties are divine opportunities to grow your faith. These unexpected difficulties are divine opportunities to grow your faith. These disappointments, disease, even death, these are things that God can use to bring glory to himself and to bring us closer to him. They don't have to destroy our faith. They can be something instead that we look back on and go, my faith is as strong as it is because there was this time, and it would be part of your and part of my faith story. When we say there was this time, and we talk about this hardship and this difficulty, but then we talk about what God did through us with that, and we get to go, wow, look at this amazing God. So we're going to camp out in John chapter 11. John chapter 11 in our New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, one of the four Gospels. So it's a book that's all about the life and times of Jesus. And chances are that most of the people in the room today are going to be somewhat familiar, maybe even know several details of what we're going to be looking at. But as we look at this, I want us to look at it through the lens of pivotal circumstance. That we would look at it through this lens of, hey, let's look at this and let's see that God wants to make this pivotal circumstance that would grow somebody's faith. So we're going to start chapter 11, verse 1. A man named Lazarus was sick, and he lived in Bethany with his sisters, Mary and Martha. This is the Mary who later poured the expensive perfume on the Lord's feet and wiped them with her hair. Her brother, Lazarus, was sick. So that kind of just kind of sets the tone. We know who it is. Hey, these three, they're kind of living together, and brother, sister, and he's sick. And so we get to know that her brother was sick. And when we look at this further, we get to see something else. Look at this, verse 3. So the two sisters sent a message to Jesus telling him, Lord, your dear friend is very sick. So they're sending this message to JC. Jesus, Lazarus is sick. And we know that you would want to know because we know that you would want to come because we know what you're capable of doing. Well, one of the things that we can see when we look at this is we can see the value of relationships. Here's Jesus that already has a relationship. There's a friendship here. Jesus has his 12 disciples. He's friends with them. He later even tells them and makes sure that they know, hey, you're my friends. And then here's some friends of his as well. And what we get to see is through this friendship, they're wanting to lean into him and say, hey, can you come and can you help? They're sending this word, sending this message. You know, one of the things that we want to do at Crosspoint is we want to help create a sense of community within our church. That we know that just coming in here and sitting in here, and hopefully you're getting some practical teaching, it's one of the things we aim to do, that you get that part in here. But we want to help you be able to have some providential relationships. We can't force that. We can't make that happen. But we certainly want to help it to happen. And one of the ways that we do that is through community groups. We call them journey teams. Maybe you've heard of them as small groups. But it's a way for us to get some people together that are going to spend some time together. They're going to pray together. They're going to discuss a message and try to learn more and sharpen each other, share their perspectives and their thoughts on it, grow with each other. They might even serve and doing a volunteer thing together. But they would just grow and do life, that they would depend on each other. And in your seat back, if you weren't here last week when we got to promote this, then I want to let you know about it. But in your seat back pocket, that we've got one of these. It says Ripples at the top. Because we're going to be starting a series on August 27th called Ripples. It's going to be for 6 weeks. And we would love for you to give this a try. Would you just experiment? Would you just say, you know what, I've never done that. I probably would never even want to do it. But you know what, just to get the pastor off my back, okay, let's sign up and do it. And that way we just say we did it, and then we can say, okay, we tried it and it doesn't work. Okay, great. But this is a way for you to say, hey, I'm willing to try that out. I'll at least give it a shot. And there's more than one thing you can do with this. You can go, hey, I'm willing to try to lead one of those groups, and we would certainly welcome that. You might go, you know, I would never lead one, but I certainly would open up my home and let people come meet in my home as long as you can get somebody else to come lead. Well, we have those host homes that we're looking for as well. You can choose what type of group you would want to be part of. But we would love to get you to where you would connect and at least try to see, what could this be like? And I know we're all busy. And life sometimes is tough and demanding. But what if we could get together with some other people that we could lean on and people that we could rely on, that we could count on? We would know they would be praying with us and praying for us and praying through whatever it is that we're going through. Journey teams. We would love to get you to be part of that. So that's what I want to share with you from there. So Jesus certainly has this kind of relationship with Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Verse 4. But when Jesus heard about it, that Lazarus was sick, he said, Lazarus' sickness will not end in death. No, it will happen for the glory of God. So the Son of God will receive glory from this. So it's not going to end in death. And God's going to be glorified. The Son of God, which is Jesus, that's him, is going to be glorified in all of this as well. And then we get to verse 5. So, although Jesus loved Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, you don't even have to know the details of this story. But when you see a verse like that, it's kind of like, uh-oh. It doesn't sound like things are going to turn out very well. Because it says, for although, you know, something must end up happening. So we look at this. For although Jesus loved Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, he stayed where he was for the next 2 days. Finally, he said to his disciples, let's go back to Judea. So they've sent this message in the word, and it is urgent. He is sick. We need you to come. And he gets the message, and he's like, oh, that's good to know. You know what? It's not going to end in death, and God's going to be glorified, and I'm going to be glorified. This is a praise God moment. Thank you. Thank you for sending. You guys can go back, and thank you for sending me the report. That's virtually what is taking place here. Until he is finally ready to go back. Verse 8. But his disciples objected. Rabbi, and it means teacher, and that's what they would call him because he was their instructor. Rabbi, they said, only a few days ago the people in Judea were trying to stone you. Are you going there again? Like, Jesus, you make a lot of wise decisions. It's easy for us to follow you on. But really, is this one of those ones you should be doing? And then Jesus gives this response that we're not going to take time to read. And it has to do with how many hours of daylight there is and what happens in the light and what happens in the darkness. And he's really referring to him being the light of the world that they probably didn't even get in the moment until after everything. They're remembering it going, oh, yeah, we only did have him for a little bit. And then he gets right back to the topic at hand. Verse 11. Then he said, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but now I will go and wake him up. And his disciples said, Lord, if he's sleeping, he will soon get better. I think maybe even the tone was something more like this. If he's sleeping, and he's already getting that habit of sleeping right now, and let's not go. Let's not interrupt that and just let him sleep and sleep and sleep and he'll finally get better so that we don't have to go. They thought Jesus meant Lazarus was simply sleeping. But Jesus meant Lazarus had died. So he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. Which has to be absolutely confusing. But wait a second, didn't you say that he wouldn't die and that God's going to be glorified and you're going to be glorified and now you're telling us that he's dead? And then he says something that even sounds a little disturbing. And for your sakes, I'm glad that I wasn't there. For your sake, I'm glad I wasn't there. For your sake, I'm glad that I wasn't there and people would have put pressure on me and say, hey, you got to do something and you got to heal him because if you're here, you can. But he wasn't. And so they thought he couldn't if he's not there. So for your sakes, I'm glad I wasn't there. For now, you will really believe. Come, let's go see him. Come on. And for your sakes, I'm glad because now you're going to really believe. And Jesus, when he said that, it must have been so inspiring that the disciples were like going, oh, well, we might get stoned to death back there, but wow, I guess we should go. In fact, we even get to see Thomas's response. Thomas, nicknamed the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let's go too and die with Jesus. I mean, isn't that exciting? Yeah, hey, you know what? Let's just go and experience the same. And that's what he's thinking. And so Jesus ends up going, he arrives there, and he's been told that Lazarus has been in the grave for 4 days. He's been dead. But he shows up. Verse 20, when Martha got word that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him. But Mary stayed in the house. It's almost like Mary's going, you know, I'm kind of mad at him. I'm disappointed. He should have come earlier. But she just stayed behind. And then Martha. It's not going to be that she's going to pop up and see Jesus and go, oh, Jesus, I'm so glad you're here. It's not going to be that she's going to wrap up, oh, now everything's going to be okay. In fact, she's got some words that she wants to say to Jesus. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask. That there's almost a sense of she's blaming Jesus. My brother wouldn't have died if only you'd have been here. And then she's got this sense of, but I know that even now you can get whatever it is that you ask God for. That you have that ability to ask him and he will just do. See, in God's economy, belief, it's more valuable than health or even happiness. And Jesus knows this and he wants us to get this thing. Just to see in God's economy what is the most important thing. Jesus told her, your brother will rise again. Yes, Martha said, he will rise when everyone else rises at the last day. And what she's referring to, she goes, I've been taught, I've been discipled, I've been studying, I know that, yeah, we're going to all eventually die and we're going to be put in a tomb and in a grave. But at the last day, judgment day, when life on earth comes to an end, everybody who's a believer is going to rise again. We're going to rise. We're going to meet Jesus up in the sky. And then we're going to get escorted into heaven. Yeah, yes, I know. I know he's going to. I know he's going to rise at the last day. Jesus told her, I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live even after dying. This is because of who he is and his power. You see, time is everything, and Jesus knows that this is the time for him to reveal something about himself. I am the resurrection and the life. Jesus knows, and he's wanting us to know, that there's something that happens even when this body shuts down. There is a soul that will continue to exist. And that soul that continues to exist, we say live. But when Jesus talks about it, he talks about that those who believe, they live. And he's talking about being in heaven and being with him and being with God. But then he'll also talk about people that don't believe in him and how they'll go to a very real place called hell. And he actually calls that eternal death. But yet you're still living through the death, the pain, and the suffering of no love. See, God is love, and there's not going to be any part of God in hell and living life with absolutely no form of love, not even a cheap version of acceptance, nothing. And Jesus is wanting us to get this and know this. He says, everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this, Martha? Martha, do you have big enough faith? Do you have big enough trust? Do you have confidence in me and what I am telling you? Verse 27. Yes, Lord, she told him. I have always believed you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one who has come into the world from God. I've always believed this. Then she turned to Mary. She called Mary aside from the mourners and told her, the teacher is here, and he wants to see you. So Mary immediately went to him, and Jesus had stayed outside the village at the place where Martha met him. And when the people who were at the house consoling Mary saw her leave to go hastily, they assumed that she was going to Lazarus' grave to weep. So they followed her there. Now, in this culture, in this day, there were mourners. There would be professional mourners. There were people who were paid to come and mourn when somebody died. They would come and they would weep and they would make it part of this public thing and everybody would get to see, oh, wow, this person must have been really important. Look how many people are here. Look how many people are weeping. And so these mourners are following Mary as she goes to connect with Jesus. Verse 32, when Mary arrived and saw Jesus, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. To which Jesus is going, I just heard your sister say the same thing to me a few moments ago. In other words, what she's saying, Martha and Mary, is Jesus, I believe in your limited power. Jesus, I believe in your limited authority. Jesus, I believe that you have some limits, and if you would have just been here and been present, then our brother would have not died. And I think sometimes we try to put some limits on Jesus ourselves. Jesus, if only. And we tell him, and we say it in anger, what we think shouldn't have happened or should have happened, and but then we think, oh, but he's limited, and we don't always get it. Verse 33, when Jesus saw her weeping and saw the other people wailing with her, a deep anger welled up within him, and he was deeply troubled. To which you might see that and go, why would Jesus be angry? These people that are weeping over the loss of someone they love. I think that maybe Jesus looked out and he saw all this weeping. And he saw these people crying because they think the best is over. And poor family and poor Lazarus. And I think that Jesus gets angry. Because he's looking at people and they're not seeing that they were created for eternity. That there is an eternal purpose, an eternal relationship that you were created for. And as they're weeping, they don't get that Lazarus is truly better off being in heaven with God. And he gets angry in this moment. And his anger, it comes in and it even begins to show. I think when we look at verse 34 and we see these words, where have you put him? I don't even think that it was this compassionate tone. Where have you put him? I'm one of these guys that kind of looks at this and just goes, I think that there's Jesus, and he's going, where'd you put him? You know, he's like, you guys don't even get this, don't even see, and I got to deal with this now and help deal with you guys. Because this is going to be a pivotal circumstance. Where have you put him?" he asked them. And they told him, "Lord, come and see." Then Jesus wept. You see, this is puzzling. Why was Jesus weeping? What was going on? Is he weeping because he regrets delaying? And I could have been here. I should have been here. I shouldn't have waited. I'm so sorry. Because I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's the reason for which he is weeping. I do think that there is some compassion that does come in. And that he weeps because of others that are weeping and they're hurting. But I also think he's weeping. Because as humanity, we in them in this moment, I think it's still true of us, we're just not seeing God's economy here. And it's about that the belief is far more valuable than health or happiness. And they're weeping because there's neither one of those for Lazarus right now from their position. Verse 36, the people who were standing nearby said, "See how much he loved him?" But some said, "This man healed a blind man. Couldn't he have kept Lazarus from dying?" And let me tell you the answer. The answer is yes. Yes, he could have. And that might even disturb some of you. That he could have, but he didn't? Yeah. And that same disturbing answer for him is going to be the same disturbing answer for some of the things that we end up going through. And that we end up going through something, think we shouldn't have to go through it, and God, couldn't you have? And the answer is, yeah. He could have. He could have stepped in. He could have kept it from happening. Sure. The answer is yes. Yes, he could have. But it's the purpose for which he doesn't that becomes most important. Verse 38, Jesus was still angry as he arrived at the tomb, and a cave with a stone rolled across its entrance. "Roll the stone aside," Jesus told them. But Martha, the dead man's sister, protested, "Lord, he's been dead for 4 days. The smell will be terrible." It's like, I don't want to smell that. I don't want to remember my brother that way. Jesus, what are you doing? What are you up to? And Jesus responded, "Didn't I tell you that you would see God's glory if you believe? Did I tell you this?" And so they end up rolling the stone away. Jesus ends up looking up to heaven. He prays to the Father in heaven. He gives him glory. He says, "Oh God, I'm doing this so that they would see." And then we get to see how Jesus comes out of that prayer. Verse 43, then Jesus shouted, "Lazarus, come out!" Shouting to a dead man, "Lazarus, come out!" And the dead man came out, his hands and feet bound in grave clothes, his face wrapped in a headcloth. Jesus told them, "Unwrap him and let him go." Because he's alive. He's no longer dead. And I think that there is this question. A question that we ask of God, whether we ask it directly to him. Many times we ask it of others that they say they believe in God and we're having trouble believing in him. And we ask this question. This question comes over and over and over. And this question is, why? Why? And we want to know why. Why do these things happen? Why did this have to happen? And we get to see a verse that answers this question of why. And it's the very next verse. Verse 45. Many of the people who were with Mary believed in Jesus when they saw this happen. Why would God allow this to happen? Because God's in the business of glorifying himself. And when God glorifies himself and people get to see and discover just who God is, we benefit from it when we put our faith, our hope, and our trust in him. This is the why. And when you look at this, Jesus didn't just leverage this pivotal circumstance. He created it. He delayed to make sure that this would be the opportunity. And these unexpected difficulties, they are divine opportunities for us to grow our faith. Let me share something with you from a guy named Philip Yancey. He says, there is only one thing worse than being disappointed with God, and that is disappointment without God. Because see, when you're disappointed with God, you can still kind of lean into him and ask people, but when you're disappointed without God and don't have God at all, that's a disappointment that's hard to overcome. See, pain and suffering, they aren't the exception. It's the norm. It's going to happen. And pivotal circumstances is one of the things that God will leverage to grow our faith. Let me give you three things as we wrap this up. The believing God is doing something to you. It causes our faith to wane. Just kind of fade away. When we just think, oh, you know, God's doing something to me. Believing God is doing something in you causes our faith to question. That if it's to us, that we're like, oh, it's going to wane. Our faith's going to. But if it's in us, we begin to question and go, what's God up to? What's God doing? Why is this happening? But the third, believing God is doing something through you, it causes our faith to grow. And pivotal circumstances are things that can grow our faith as we see God use us and do something through us. So we need to pray. And we do, but we need to pray not just that God would do something and not just that God would change the thing, but a prayer that we need to add is this. God, I need to see you in this if I'm going to get through this. See, it's a prayer that doesn't tell God he's got to change it, but it's a prayer that says, God, I need to see you in this if I'm going to get through this. And it's where we begin to have this big faith that we trust God no matter what. And big faith is the kind of faith that it trusts in advance what we will only come to discover in hindsight. That's the kind of faith that our Heavenly Father wants us to have in him. Pray with me. Heavenly Father, you are the big God. And you're the God that is always the God that can orchestrate anything. And God, there are times that we experience this hardship and these difficulties, these circumstances that we would never even wish them on people we don't even like. And God, it's hard to face them at times. God, would you help our faith to be a faith that we would lean into you when those things happen instead of leaning away? God, would you allow our faith to be a faith that it would grow because as we look at and we see what is happening, that we would take an approach, God, that we would say, even though this is happening, that I still believe. And that I would still believe in you, that would be true of every single one of us in here. That no matter what is happening in life, that we would trust you in those circumstances and that we would be ones who still believe. Jesus, it's in your name we pray and ask that you would help us to get to that place with our faith.